We are in the second week of Lent, and I remind you, probably don't need a reminder, that we are focusing on covenant this Lenten season. It's become clear to us, I think, already that God is known in covenant. Last Sunday, we examined the covenant that God made with all of creation, not just with the human creation, but with all creation. This Sunday, the covenant is made with Abraham and Sarah to not only include them and their family, but all the families of the earth. When I started thinking about this covenant, it became a little curious to me why this particular covenant would be included in this second week of Lent, because it feels to me that this covenant has to do more with Easter than with Lent. It's in many ways the story of a promise of life out of death, hope for a future when there seemed to be no hope, when all seemed to be lost. And let me remind you that not to have a child in ancient Israel was not to have a future, because children were your social security. There was no social security system. So in order to be cared for, one needed to have offspring. Especially you think of that when you enter your aging years. But not only that, they were your hope for the future beyond this life, because it was thought that one lived on in eternal life through your children, your descendants. Do you see why the Abraham and Sarah at 99 and 90, it was a pretty big deal when there were no children? It's a wonderful story, I think, of God's divine imagination. As Sarah says, in effect, nothing is too wonderful for the Lord. But I'm getting ahead of myself here, because I think it's important to understand a little bit more of the context of this story. Likely, this story was probably written during the time of the exile in Babylon in the 6th century BCE. Israel had been devastated, as we know through history, by their conquest. Their beloved city had been destroyed. Their center of both political and religious life had been wiped out. And here most of them were off in a foreign land. Surely they were wondering, what in the world happened? Where were God's promises to them? The covenant that God had made with their ancestors seemed to have gone up in smoke. So the priestly writer reminds them that God is there, that God promised an everlasting covenant, and that God promised to always be with them, and that God would keep God's promise. It was a promise to hold on even in the midst of the darkness of exile. It was a way of establishing or reestablishing an identity of a people who felt like their identity was badly shaken, or perhaps they had totally lost their identity. When the very foundation of faith had been shaken by this crisis. So into all of that comes the priestly writer who speaks this word, reminding people of the covenant God had made with ancestors. Now, what's omitted from our text this morning that Bob didn't read were the verses that talk about how the covenant was to be lived out among the people. I don't know why, if they thought it wasn't particularly appropriate for Sunday morning reading or what, to talk about circumcision. And it was not that this instruction to circumcise this 99-year-old man and all the males of the tribe became a condition of the covenant itself, but rather was a sign of the relationship. But still, this seems really problematic to me. How is it that one is to know whether the whole tribe is honoring the covenant? Who is keeping track of this? I don't know. And then what about the women? What would be their sign? Did they matter or didn't they? This idea of circumcision as a sign of the covenant clearly had to be a male idea, don't you think? One other background note before launching into the story. One should observe that in the book of Genesis and throughout the Bible, genealogies are essential. We know that who we are and where we come from is to link our lives to the past and to be rooted in the present and confident of the future. And to know that by knowing who you are and where you came from. So we pick up the story in Genesis 17. First God appears to Abram and announces God's presence. And Abram falls on his face, incredulous that he is being addressed by the Holy One. This is the first time, but not the last time, even in the story, that Abram falls on his face. Is it in reverence or is it in sheer terror at being addressed by the divine? My guess, it's in terror. At his age, he must have surely thought, this was it. I'm as good as dead. But Yahweh does not strike him dead, but addresses this old man and says to Abram, as for me, this is my covenant. Now, I notice that this is the exact same language, likely the same priest who's writing this story as wrote the Noah covenant. As for me, this is my covenant with you. You shall be the ancestor of a multitude of nations. What? They had been happy with a child, much less a multitude of nations, but God doesn't ask them. God just announces the covenant and turns their world upside down. And with the covenant, Abram becomes Abraham, father of many people. And Sarai becomes Sarah, princess of many. And the covenant signifies a shift in who they are. God promises that these two old people will have descendants. Their present identity as hopeless, without a future, suddenly and serendipitously gets turned on its head. And their response? They laugh. 99-year-old Abraham lets out a toothless cackle when heard something so absurd. And when Sarah overheard the Lord talking obstetrics to somebody her age, she laughs too. Well, of course they laughed. It's a ridiculous idea. Did I remind you that they're old? All logic told them that their childbearing years were well in the past, and that even time itself was running out for them, for their lives. It just didn't make sense. And I wondered, what message have you heard? Perhaps this small voice inside, not a divine thunder cloud message, but what message have you heard in your life that have seemed so absurd that your first response was to laugh in hysterical disbelief? Later in the story, you can read the drama that repeats itself and more guffaws come from Sarah and Abraham. And the Lord responds, "Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? Just for that, I'm going to invite you to name your baby Isaac," which means laughter. And 9 months later, Sarah's laughing all the way from the geriatric wing to the maternity wing of the nursing home. Isaac's born. And Sarah laughs again. This time, not a laughter of cynicism and disbelief, but a laughter of wonderment. God has brought laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me. So I think the text invites us to hear this in the second Sunday of Lent, playfully and joyfully and with a hint of laughter. Now, it should be noted that God's covenant with Abraham and Sarah doesn't come about because they're such good people. I talked to my 98-year-old father last night, and I said, "Dad, I'm preaching this story today. What word of wisdom do you have for me?" And he said some wonderful things, and it was good to talk something other than his failing health, because he's got a great, sharp, clear mind yet. But one of the things we talked about is that even though Abraham later on in the New Testament and Sarah are talked about as these great people of faith, they hardly come across that way, do they? We know the story well from a few chapters earlier about Abraham's lie to Pharaoh. We know, too, the story of Hagar. And even after God had promised descendants, that Sarah fails to trust this promise and Abraham goes along with it all and has a child by Hagar, only to have Sarah treat this slave badly. And obviously, while God invites humanity to establish covenants of love and care, God's covenant seems always to be first and unconditional. And if we pay attention, as I mentioned, to genealogies, biblical and our own, I would add, we quickly discover saints and sinners, faithfulness and faithlessness. These genealogies keep us humble. Our own genealogy, genogram, keep us humble and may even cause us to giggle, guffaw, laugh at the people who appear there. We quickly, I hope, begin to realize that we worship a God of mercy, grace, who keeps covenant even when we break it. We also observe that while Abraham and Sarah receive the promise of a child, they do not see the full fulfillment of the promise of a multitude of nations. They die without that fulfillment, which is often the case with people of faith who may or may not see the fulfillment of their hopes and dreams for themselves and their families, our church, or our world. But with the intrusion of this loving, living God, when that God intrudes, when the promises of God come true against all odds, I think our response is going to be laughter, glee, delight. And even though we're in these somber days of Lent, we experience something of Easter resurrection hope. Reinhold Niebuhr writes, and I quote, "Humor is the beginning of faith, and laughter the beginning of prayer." I don't know that I fully understand that, but I like it. Someone has said that laughter is a close cousin of faith, a humble recognition that the fate of the world, the significance of our lives, is not entirely up to us. God is busy, active, and we are not permitted to give up hope for ourselves or our world. Abraham laughed. Sarah laughed. And you know, I kind of think, although the text doesn't tell us, that God laughed too. You can just sort of imagine the inside joke between these three. Yahweh, Sarah, and Abraham. This is going to be good. Who's going to believe this? Maybe laughter is our grace-filled way of getting out of ourselves a little bit and realizing that as ludicrous and unbelievable as it may be, God's promises hold for us and our world, even against all odds, even when it feels like it's all falling apart. And admitting to ourselves and to each other that we don't have it all figured out, and we don't have to. We don't even have ourselves figured out. I'll speak for myself. And there's a whole new identity just waiting for us to claim in this season of Lent, called to get beyond ourselves, to open ourselves to the possibilities and the ways that God has for us as individuals and as a congregation that we can't even fathom. And I come back and ask again, have there been times in your life when you felt hopeless, when it felt like all had been lost, when you wondered where God's promises had failed to you? And then I wonder if there have been experiences like Abraham and Sarah where we received some good news that was so seemingly absurd that you laughed, perhaps first of cynicism, but later in wonderment and delight. And I got to thinking about history and wonder that if perhaps God had come to Rosa Parks and had told her that her action of refusing to give up her seat on that bus, if something so simple was going to spark a civil rights movement in this country, might her response have been to laugh? I think so. But she gets this new identity just like Abraham does. A new identity of a nameless worker to mother of the civil rights movement. And I wonder if Billy Graham, however we feel about Billy Graham, who passed away this past week at age 99, if Billy had been told by God as a young man that he was going to preach to millions of people and touch the lives of folks around the globe, I wonder if he would have laughed. But he got this new identity as the most loved and well-respected evangelical leader of the 20th century. And then I just wondered, if the students of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, where their 17 classmates and teachers were killed by a gunman, and I wondered if one of the emerging leaders of that senior group by the name of Emma Gonzalez, I wonder if she heard God's voice to imagine a national movement of youth which could spark the imagination of youth in our community at Penn Ridge, North Penn, and others, to put pressure on legislatures at a state and national level to deal with the gun violence in our country. I wonder if they had laughed at the absurdity of these 17, 16, 18-year-olds leading a movement. Oh, others laughed. Others laughed in derision, thinking these 17-year-olds will soon go back to Snapchat and what else they're interested in. But might we have the hope and faith to believe that change is in the air and will come? And might we think about what we can do to come alongside them? Speak our minds to legislators. Support local youth. Engage our friends and families so that we might have civil conversations. This past week, Community Connections team met and we're planning an event for late April when we hope to facilitate how we work at healthy civil conversations in our community with those with whom we disagree. Stay tuned. More information will be coming. Will these students get a new identity as leaders of a movement where we finally wake up to the ways we are killing ourselves and each other? The covenant to Abraham and Sarah is inclusive and global. I will make you a multitude of nations. I'll bless you so that you might be a blessing to the nations. May we renew our covenants to God and to seeing all people as our kin in this worldwide web we call the kingdom of God. And like Abram and Sarai, we may not get new names, but by faith we laugh with joy as we realize that we are kin to all people of all the earth, and we share carbon with the stars and atoms with the animals. We may laugh at the absurdity that we are all only one family, but to grasp it in some way is to have our identity changed so that indeed we take seriously our covenant with all living things, and that yes, we too are part of this great web of being with a hopeful future that we joyfully entrust to future generations who are also part of that divine covenant made to Abraham and Sarah. So go ahead and laugh. It's a magnificent and absurd vision, but by faith we believe that God is bringing the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. May it be so.